We're very happy to be joined once again by our good friend, Philip J. Berg, Esquire, a lawyer from Philadelphia, former Democratic candidate for governor, senator in Pennsylvania, former chairman of the Democratic County Committee there in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, former Democratic state committeeman in Pennsylvania, and right now known to friends of the program as the person who is leading the charge in the defense of the U.S. Constitution against the Obama postmodern coup, focusing especially on the fact that you've got to be a natural-born citizen, and Barkey seems to fail on both counts. Phil, welcome.
My pleasure. How are you today?
Fine. We got your release, the one that you put out on the day of shame, I guess. I call it the day of the dupes, the day of malaise.
And I said it was a sad day for America.
Why don't you bring us up to date on what's going on?
Sure. First off, it was a sad day for America that basically a usurper has taken the office of, not the office. We have a usurper president. Because Obama does not have the qualifications to be president, and it's really outrageous. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court has turned down my petition for writ of certiorari, and also just now, the other day, my request for an injunction. However, what I had done with that case was I had jumped the Third Circuit to try to hope that the Supreme Court would really get involved in this expeditiously to try to halt Obama from taking office, because he's not qualified. But our case is still alive and well in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, which sits in Philadelphia, and that covers the states of New Jersey, Delaware, and Pennsylvania. And we filed our brief, which was due actually on January 20th on Inauguration Day. So our brief is in on that, and now the opposition will file their responsive briefs, and the case will move up. If we don't get hopefully we can get a favorable ruling, because we really set forth the true facts about this in the Third Circuit. If not, we'll be back up to the U.S. Supreme Court. On the other hand, we have two other cases pending right now. One we filed December 31st, and all this information is on our website, obamacrimes.com, obamacrimes.com, and we ask people to go there, and we ask people to spread it to everyone on your address book. Because we believe at this time 2, 3, 5, 10 million people might know about our position, but we have to get it up to the 50 or 75 million people, and it's very difficult because the national press has not covered it. But on December 31st, we filed a second action called Hollister versus Barry Sotouro, a.k.a. Barack Hussein Obama. And Hollister is a retired Air Force colonel, and in his suit, he has stated basically he's retired, but he's on ready recall, which means the president can recall him at any time. If he's recalled for service, does he obey a legitimate order from a legitimate president, or does he disobey an order because the president is basically illegitimate, not qualified to be in that office? So we filed that action. Excuse me, by way of an interpleader, which sort of shifts the burden a little to Obama to come forth. A response is due in a couple days on that. We expect them probably to file a motion to dismiss, but we're going to argue, you know, that it's very important. We believe that Hollister doesn't have the problem that I had in my case, because Hollister does have standing, because he could be directly affected. There's one other case that we filed, which is still under seal, so I can't discuss it, but it's over 60 days ago. And hopefully we'll be able to break it out what it is. But that case is Captain Berg versus Obama. And in that particular type case, I have standing by a previous ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court, not to me, but in a very similar case. So that's what's pending now. It's three cases. And we're about to file a fourth case, which will be a petition for writ of quo warranto, stating that the person holding that office is not entitled to be in that office, and those type of cases are filed all across the country at different times, and we think we will have proper standing for that case. So my commitment to you, Webster, and to everyone listening across this great nation and around the world is that we're going to continue our efforts. We just want the truth. If I'm wrong, then Obama, show me the documentation, I'll go away. If I'm not wrong, we're going to pursue till the documentation is put forward and he's out of office. And it's really a disgrace that we have to be questioning someone about this at this time. A former employee of mine just stopped by here 10 minutes ago, right before we went on the air, and she's now working at the United States Postal Service as a carrier, postal carrier. And I asked her, when you went to get your job, did you have to show your birth certificate? And she said, of course. You know, so for government employees have to show a birth certificate, but the president doesn't. How absurd is that?
It's absolutely absurd. Phil, I wonder, do you have any comprehensive statistics about, the number of visits at your website, Obamacrimes.com?
Now, I'll tell you what, after we hit, like, I think 115 million or something, we switched, we switched webmasters. We have a much better website, and I really haven't been in checking the numbers. I mean, it's got to be 150 million. I mean, it's amazing that it hits, but it's imperative that all your listeners pass this word on to people. Believe it or not, there's still people in our great nation that don't know nothing about this issue.
Right.
And this issue is so significant. I mean, I believe that if the issue had been out there before the November elections by the major media, he would not have won the presidency. You know, people will only go so far, you know, change, change, change. But the people would want, I mean, I had the other day, you know, a gentleman called up, he said, I'm for Obama. He said, but answer me, why won't he produce his birth certificate? And I really think that if people knew about this issue, that the approval rating him would go drop considerably because, like I say, every one of your listeners has to produce a birth certificate sometime in their lifetime, usually at least 2, 3, 4, 5 times. And it's absurd that they're doing this. I think Obama has set us up for a constitutional crisis. He's a usurper right now,
right.
Which means that any law he signs, any appointment he makes, any order he signs, they'll all become invalid when the proof comes out. And that's really ridiculous. I mean, we have to do something. The other thing is, I think he's potential for blackmail, and I think he's getting blackmailed already. I think this is candidate for change. Well, notice the candidate for change. Look at his cabinet, 75% from Bill Clinton days. And the most shocking one, in my opinion, is Robert Gates as Secretary of Defense. I mean, you know, he's been fighting, we're going to end the war, we're going to do this, I disagree with the policies. And what's he do? He picks Gates. I think the powers that be in this country sat him down and said, listen, we know Berg's right, but we'll keep you here as long as we can, but you got to play ball our way.
I know, absolutely. Let me also ask you, Phil, we have Governor Blagojevich of Illinois, who is going to be put on trial in the state Senate. Now, this would be a proceeding where, given the issues that were raised by the federal prosecutor, Fitzgerald, it would normally be quite possible that Obama would be called as a witness in the impeachment of Blagojevich. And as I understand it, the ruling in the Illinois State Senate is that the defense, in other words, Blagojevich, is not allowed to call witnesses. He has no subpoena power to compel compulsory testimony by anybody. And nevertheless, they want to go ahead and have a kind of kangaroo court mock trial. I wonder if you have any opinion about this, because this was somebody who would have had standing. You know, this Blagojevich could say, you want to throw me out? I have standing. I want Obama in here. And let's ask him right off the bat, what's your name, where were you born, and where's your citizenship?
Yeah, no, I think it's outrageous. I mean, I haven't checked the law out there, but I believe when they did the impeachment on Clinton, I think he had a defense. I mean, how can you have anything without a defense? It's like you said, a kangaroo court. It's ridiculous.
Hang on, we'll be back in just a minute.
Fine.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Thank you. Crisis Radio. This is Webster Topley in Washington, D.C., and we're talking with Philip J. Berg in near Philadelphia, PA. Phil, of course, leading the charge on the defense of the Constitution. Phil, this quo warranto, it's a rare case, right? The usual writs would be what? Mandamus, habeas, and cert. Quo warranto, an unusual one.
Yes, it is, but it goes to the stating that the person in that office is not qualified to be in that office for many different reasons, and here we're stating because he doesn't meet the qualifications from the United States Constitution. So we're working on that to start. We've just been with our brief this week, and there's another motion pending in Third Circuit. We've been busy, so that'll probably be another week or so before we file that, and we want to make sure we cross our dots and our T's, because on one of these, even the case I mentioned under seal, that shifts the burden to Obama. So we're going to get these documentation. I expect what's going to happen. I expect his attorneys are going to probably run into court and try saying you can't sue an incumbent president. But that was taken care of through the Clinton days.
Right.
With
Paula Jones.
Paula Jones. So.
Well, in the great tradition of Paula Jones, what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander.
Right.
And here we go.
So you're not rid of me yet. I'm going to be around for weeks on end.
Well, let me ask you, have you planned something like a campus speaking tour or some kind of a national tour that would take you into big media markets? Because sometimes if you want to break through someplace like, St. Louis or Houston or Denver, the way to get in there is to go there.
No, I hadn't thought of that. Then, if you can, when we get off air, if you can get back to me, give me some connections to do that. I think that'd be great. You're right. The colleges have money and they have budgets for this type thing, and I'd be willing to go. And you've heard me speak on this, and I
sure.
have it from my heart. And I think that would be a great suggestion. We could get the message out further to people. But you have my commitment, no matter what it costs, to keep going on this thing. So people can make a contribution through our site. That would help ObamaCrimes.com. Unfortunately, I've lost a number of clients recently because I've been really devoting full time to this, because there's nothing more important than our U.S. Constitution. So I will keep at this thing. The speaking tour sounds great. Another thing, people have contacted me, and we're waiting. We're trying to see. They said, should we have a rally or should we have demonstrations? And we're thinking of more petitions, but letters and petitions have worked. Perhaps rallies, maybe small ones around the country, because I know they've done that in another fashion. Because if you had it works very simply, too. We just have to come up with a slogan. I guess, Obama, show your Obama, you're unqualified, show your birth certificate. Or we'll have to short phrases for signs. But because many of your listeners might know, sometimes if you get together, you get three or four people standing at a major intersection at a certain time of day. It will expose to 10,000, 20,000 people in an hour. So we're thinking of that. We're thinking of a lot of things. Anybody has suggestions, send them to us at our go to our website, ObamaCrimes.com. Send us your suggestion. And,
Bill, I would have too. The first thing is to have, in addition to having all kinds of, sort of street demonstrations wherever possible, you ought to convene a fairly high-level conference that would be legal political. In other words, you have legal experts on a panel in a, dignified setting, but also then promote a kind of united front of people that would consider themselves to be dissident Democrats, people from center-left kind of coloration, along with libertarians that are interested in doing something vis-a-vis Obama, and attempt to get the viable people left over from the various movements that have now been destroyed, right? Impeachment and anti-war and 9/11 truth, all of these are swept away by Obama. Maybe to promote a regroupment around that would be one thing, a kind of a fairly high-level conference where you'd address the legal and political issues raised by the fact that you've got this constitutional crisis. The second thing is you should write a book. There should be a comprehensive a book with the entire case laid out, and maybe also, the history of your involvement with it, because you started with this back in late August, before the Democratic Convention. They had time to turn away from the abyss, and instead they ran over it.
Good suggestion. I'll try to do it. It's just, it's the time limitations, well, as you know, because you've written many books, and but I'm going to try. Whatever, I'll consider that, and I'm going to do whatever is necessary, and we
and
have to
me,
get...
Let me then urge everybody to help you to do whatever you decide to do. You've got to go to ObamaCrimes.com and give a contribution through PayPal and other means that are available there to keep an opposition going. And as I'll talk about now in the next segment, we're going to need an opposition, and we're going to need it right now during this harrowing, terrible period of the 100 days. And I give you the last word, Phil.
Well, the last word is we have to get this message out to other people. Go to ObamaCrimes.com. Seriously, spread it to everyone in your address book. You know, if they don't like it or not, maybe just say, wake up and read it. Just say, you have to show your birth certificate, you know, and that's why spread it to whoever you know at work, your neighbors, your address book. You have lots of people. Spread it. Tell them to read it. Tell them to send it to everyone on their address book and send us a contribution, and we'll hear from you'll hear from me next week, Webster.
Wonderful. We'll have you back. Thank you very much, Phil. Keep going and keep fighting, and we'll get a report from you again next week and every week until this constitutional crisis has somehow been resolved. Thank you very much. Phil Berg in Philadelphia, ObamaCrimes.com. And let me also now come to this conclusion based on what Phil is telling us, and I think this is certainly the case. Up to now, you notice I've never called Bush president. I've always called him the tenant in the White House because he was fundamentally illegitimate, put in by vote fraud and the rats cabal, or the then equivalent, right? The Scalia, Thomas, and so forth, clique in the Supreme Court back in 2000. And then the question of whether Bush had even won the election in 2004 because of the vote fraud electronic voting machines in Ohio. I'm afraid we've now got another illegitimate president, as he says, a usurper, somebody who does not qualify for the title of president, but there is going to have to get along with tenant of the White House, holder of the White House, boss of the regime, or something of this sort. So a sad fact, but it's reality, so deal with it. Let's just go back now and conclude our line-by-line analysis. Barkey wants to do a line-by-line on the budget. We'll do a line-by-line on his ranting speech the other day. We're told that the world has changed and we have to change with it. And above all, the punchline of the whole thing, what is demanded then is a return to these truths. He's gone through a bunch of cliches. What is required of us right now is a new era of responsibility, a recognition on the part of every American that we have our duties to ourselves, our nation, and the world. This is volunteer service, volunteer labor corps, immediately turning into compulsory, obligatory labor corps, because if you don't participate, you won't get a government scholarship, you won't get your Pell Grant, you won't get your financial aid from the participating groups. So that's almost the end of Barkey's one and only inaugural. We'll be back in a minute. Crisis Radio. Just a few more words on Barkey's inaugural address. He talks about the basis of America being the God-given promise that all are equal. With Obama, you seem to have equality, but not liberty and not fraternity, but just equality. His proclaiming an end to the petty grievances is, of course, the utopian program of abolishing class struggle and the clash of interests. And the peroration, that is the last five or six paragraphs, the flights of rhetoric at the end, very flat, but simply a demagogic performance at the end. I think people who went to this were insulted by it. Again, the problem is you people are the problem. You didn't face the hard choices. Bush is being told you were not reactionary enough. And above all, notice there's no element that we see in the Franklin D. Roosevelt inaugural. Let's just look back to 1933. We were told The reason for the crisis, says Roosevelt, primarily this is because the rulers of the exchange of mankind's goods have failed through their own stubbornness and their own incompetence, have admitted their failure and abdicated. That would be Robert Rubin. Practices of the unscrupulous money changers stand indicted in the court of public opinion, rejected by the hearts and minds of men. They have tried, but they have failed. Faced by the failure of credit, they have proposed only the lending of more money, stripped of the lure of profit by which to induce our people to follow their false leadership. They have resorted to exhortations, pleading tearfully for restored confidence. That was Herbert Hoover. They know only the rules of a generation of self-seekers. They have no vision, and when there is no vision, the people perish. That's Franklin D. Roosevelt. He's telling you Wall Street is responsible for the crisis. Barkey tells you the opposite. We have failed to make the hard choices. I'm sorry, Barkey. You go back and tell your owners there that we didn't fail. Soros, David Rockefeller, and the ruling class failed. Notice also in the foreign policy part of Obama, we've got all kinds of ranting about Al-Qaeda and the war on terror. Roosevelt, in the field of world policy, I would dedicate this nation to the policy of the good neighbor, the neighbor who resolutely respects himself, and because he does so, respects the rights of others, a neighbor who respects his obligations and respects the sanctity of his agreements in and with a world of neighbors. Now, that means imperialism is bad. The imperialist interference and meddling in the internal affairs of sovereign nation states is not your policy. You don't do it. And with Barkey, of course, the killing in Pakistan goes on, the killing that Obama had demanded. Let's just look at some of the little straws in the wind. Bad omens. Roberts flubbed the oath. Obama flubbed the oath. Boy, neither Roberts nor Obama have been staying up late at night memorizing the Constitution. The mangling of the Constitution, the mangling of the U.S. Constitution, as Phil Berg is saying, at the beginning of this inaugural, is a very, very bad sign for the greater mangling that's about to come. There was no press at the second swearing-in. Obama visits the press room, rejects questions, and they drool and keep drooling. Greg Craig seems to be the handler telling Barkey what to do. Geithner, the tax cheat, he's not the first. Andrew Mellon, Secretary of the Treasury for Harding, Coolidge, Hoover, was the tax cheat. And, of course, Mellon is a good example of the policies we don't need. The number two for the Pentagon is a Raytheon lobbyist. Wait a minute. How come we have lobbyists at the number two in the Pentagon from Raytheon in violation of your own executive order? Eric Holder, the corrupt Mark Rich advocate. And I'm wondering if Zbigniew Brzezinski was at the inaugural. Now, in terms of the concretes, an Afghan peace proposal had been brought forward, a peace plan for Afghanistan approved by the Taliban, the other guerrilla groups, and by the Karzai U.S. puppet regime. And they had chosen a back channel. It's a guy called Christoph Herstel, H-O-Umlaut, or H-O-E-R-S-T-E-L. You can see a release about this at Global Research, at Rents, and perhaps at other sites now. I simply put this together. The original of this is an interview in German on the website Alles Schall und Rauch, all smoke, sound and smoke, where Christoph Herstel is an expert on Afghanistan. He's written two books on Afghanistan. For a number of years in the past decade, he's been the only Western expert that the Taliban have been willing to talk to. So he says that he was working as a back channel for this combination, essentially the relevant forces inside Afghanistan, to end the killing. He approached a member of the Afghanistan Department of Barkey's transition team. That is to say, he approached someone from the Obama transition team with this peace plan for Afghanistan, and he was told to get lost. It was brusquely rejected, out of hand, no interest, no consideration. Obama is committed to endless war in Afghanistan, not because of these silly things about bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, war on terror, and so forth, but for the purpose of destroying Pakistan as a nation. They need to keep that going. Obama could end it. He could say, let's get out of it and let's consider this, He could also end the illegal predator attacks in northern Pakistan, which he is the main supporter of. And of course, he could say, there will be no Polish missile crisis. But he didn't do any of that. Here's what we seem to have. We had Barkey's State of the Barkey's inaugural address. There's now the specter of Barkey's State of the Union address. Watch out for this. Hold on to your hats. This will be an attempt to stampede the Congress. In other words, to do the 100 days in grand style, 100 days to the Mussolini fascist corporate state. And what is seems to be in the air from various commentators is a grand assault, a grand offensive conspiracy by the Obama gang and their Wall Street backers that includes everything, the stimulus, the TARP, in other words, the bailout, health care, entitlement reforms, the defense budget, health and human services, Medicare, Medicaid, everything, all in one grand austerity package, a massive transfer of resources out of the pockets of the poor and the middle class and everybody else into the pockets of Wall Street, George Soros, David Rockefeller, Goldman Sachs, and the rest of them, an economic monstrosity, in other words, a Frankenstein's monster unleashed on the world. So watch out for an announcement of a State of the Union address by Obama in those terms, an attempt to stampede Congress. In other words, to go around the usual committee hearings. Now, this is exactly what we had with the TARP round one and what we had with the TARP round two. In other words, the bailout of the Wall Street banks, the attempted bailout of the derivatives bubble. Of course, a failure. No committee hearings, no normal process, just a huge hysterical stampede. That is possible, and the Congress has got to say no. They've been robbed once. So Republicans are welcome, of course. Any New Deal Democrats who've got any guts to stand up to this, this will be a critical moment. Remember, Carter, even though he had a two-thirds majority in both houses of Congress, had abysmal relations. And I think Obama's going to try to win big, double or nothing, va-banque, right at the beginning. And that has got to be stopped. We've also got Robert Reich, the left-wing corporatist economist, telling us that white construction workers should not benefit from the infrastructure plans of Obama. This sounds like the Philadelphia plan. Robert Reich embraces the Philadelphia plan. You can read about this in my book, Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. That is one of the critical Nixon administration plans to play white construction workers against black construction workers and bust the unions and help Wall Street. Back in a minute.
The GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Back to World Crisis Radio here in the wake of the Day of the Dupes, 20th of January 2009, the day of malaise, and the moment when the U.S. government under Obama has essentially declared war on the American people. It was a speech dripping with pessimism, historical pessimism, cultural pessimism, hatred of science, hatred of technology, repudiation of modern civilization, really. And the very ominous harbinger of genocidal austerity on the home front, something that Bush, by and large, did not stress, although it was going on in the background. Now that we've had the $700 billion TARP, the $700 billion Wall Street derivatives bubble bailout, which, of course, is basically gone, we have the state of California is announced that on February 1st, they're going to stop sending out welfare checks to welfare recipients. Boy, you've got to have one foot in the grave these days to get on the TANF, T-A-N-F, that is to say Temporary Assistance to Needy Families. That's what's left of what used to be welfare under the Social Security Act of 1935. In order to get on the TANF, you've got to have one foot in the grave. And if they're cutting off your check under that program, that means you're old, you're sick, you're very young, you're unemployable, you've got all kinds of problems. If they don't send out those checks, people will die. Where was the specter of welfare victims in California who are going to die? Where was that mentioned in Barkey's inaugural address? Nowhere. And some people say, well, I don't care about that. Those are illegal aliens in California. Let me remind everybody, we're working here under the Nuremberg Code. We're working under the International War Crimes Tribunal, Nuremberg, Germany, 1945-46. The U.S. is party to these things. They have binding legal force. And it says, if you deny food, clothing, and medical assistance to civilians under whatever pretext, you have committed a high crime against humanity, and you can be hanged. So that, I think, puts the thing in moral perspective. Remember also that economics historically has killed far more than military action. Robert McNamara killed more at the World Bank IMF complex when he was ensconced at the World Bank than he ever did at the Pentagon, clearly, because economics has that pervasive ability. So we've had one monstrous failed bailout. We're now told that Thane, the head of Merrill Lynch, distributed $2, $3, $4 billion of TARP money, public money, to his bankrupt gangster band of executives in the final days of 2008. And now Barkey is going to come, quite possibly, with the grand assault, right, the grand offensive conspiracy against the Congress to try to stampede them into new rounds of massive wealth transfer in the direction of Wall Street. They've got to fight back. Otherwise, you're going to be courting more and more people like Thane who will simply see this money train go by and they dip into it and help themselves. Now, none of this stuff did any good. It's interesting to remark that Obama's inauguration was the worst performance of the stock market on any inauguration in United States history as far back as the records reach. The market was down 4 to 5%, but the big thing was 20% loss for Citibank, 20% loss for J.P. Morgan Chase, which is supposed to be the winner of this. Of course, it's a derivatives monster. State Street Bank down about 60%, almost two-thirds in one day. This was extremely grim, and above all, the performance of the bank stocks being down, the entire banking sector down approximately 20% across the board, some more, some less, that is very, very ominous. So we are headed now into this hyperinflationary phase. Rivlin, the deficit hawk and austerity freak left over from Clinton, says that she expects increased government spending, higher interest rates, and the fall of the dollar. Now, if you put that into the proper perspective, that means hyperinflationary depression or hyperstagflation. What you had under Carter with a very high misery index, except multiply it by a factor of 10, at least one order of magnitude and probably more. As we look around the world, the Nikkei is racing the Dow to the bottom. The new race for the bottom is not the race for the bottom of globalization, although that's what it comes from. The Nikkei is now at about 7,800 going down. So the Nikkei is about where the Dow is, right? The Dow is at about 8,100. The Nikkei at 7,800. Down, down, down they go. Of course, in the case of Japan, it's because their currency is too strong compared to the U.S. We're told now that the British bad bank plan is getting support. But the main thing, again, look to Obama. And let me repeat, in that interview that Obama did with the editorial board of the Washington Post, it was published last Friday morning. This is austerity. He says that the current rate of entitlement expenditure in Social Security and Medicare is unsustainable. Social Security, he says, can be fixed, but Medicare is going to bankrupt the entire government. And therefore, he says the three watchwords of his administration will be sacrifice, responsibility, and duty. Mussolini, credere, obbedire, combattere, believe, obey, and fight. No, we're not quite there, but sacrifice, responsibility, and duty, says Obama. And his new budget director, Comrade Orshag, comes in and says, the current federal budget is unsustainable. It's going to be time for austerity, budget cuts, downward pressure on the standard of living. But within that, a massive shift of resources out of the poor, out of the middle class, upper middle class, all sorts of people, into the hands of the upper 1% or perhaps even one half of 1%, the various finance oligarchs who run these places like J.P. Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon, Blankfein over at Goldman Sachs, Pandit the Bandit at Citibank. You get the idea. There's this guy also at Bank of America who just fired Thane for taking the money. He'll be getting the money, too. This is certainly a terrible time. It is a very grim perspective. Don't blame me. I tried to create alternatives to this. Some of the left liberals are waking up. But the big question now is to create a New Deal or moderate left opposition to these pro-Wall Street policies on the part of Obama. Call them what they are. Don't call them communism. This is not communism. It's not the New Deal. It's the anti-New Deal. He's the anti-Roosevelt. The New Deal is payments to individuals, federal emergency relief to individuals, old age pensions to individuals, unemployment benefits to individuals, helping people not to be foreclosed on and thrown out of their homes, the GI Bill that gives you the right to have a college education, own your home, and get financing for a business. The rights of farmers built into the New Deal. The parity price. We don't have any of that. We've got a combination of Andrew Mellon and Herbert Hoover where all the money goes to bankers and nothing has been done to stop foreclosures. Unemployment is now 20%, I would say. At the time that Roosevelt was inaugurated, unemployment was about 25%. So we're getting there very fast. And we will be leaving 1933 behind us as the good old days before too long, sometime in the course of this depression year, contraction year of 2009. Interesting that Ambassador Holbrooke, the mad bomber of Serbia, has been chosen to deal with Pakistan. We've got Mitchell being sent to the Middle East. I think an exercise in window dressing, but above all, Holbrooke, the guy who superintended the bombing of Serbia, the destruction of the Danube bridges, all of that is Richard Holbrooke. He's a Russia hater, and he's an imperialist operative of the most vicious type. So when the new regime of hope and change, here it is. Remember now, this is a new regime that depends on fakery, deception, trickery, hypocrisy, lying, window dressing. So therefore, as Joe Biden said, gird your loins, international confrontation in the first 6 months, 12 months to a collapse of the popularity of the regime because of its draconian economic policies, meaning austerity, budget cuts, and a downward pressure on the standard of living. We'll be back next week, fairness doctrine permitting.